I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about the Stamp Act.
So grab your playing cards.
And let's get civical. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I am Lizzie Stewart.
And I am Arden Walentowski.
And I talked about it last week, and now it's today. This is literally my first day after my first night of sleeping in a king-size bed.
Oh, I did not realize it was so new.
So it was so new. Last night was the first night. Kyle and I spent what can only be described as 6 to 8 hours disassembling our old bed, assembling our new bed, trying to salvage our relationship in the process. Mm-hmm. A lot of stops and starts. And the final product is really worth it. We have a new mattress that we both love.
Good.
And we have sheets that I hate that I'm going to get replaced. But overall, like, there's so much space. Truly, at one point last night, I woke up for a second and thought Kyle left the bed, which he does often because he's just a nomad in the night. I literally thought he left the bed, and I had the thought, wow, I can't believe he left the bed. It's the new bed. Went back to sleep, asked him this morning why he left the bed, and he was like, babe, I was there the whole night. And I'm like, that's crazy. That's bananas that you were there the whole night.
Wait, do you guys, because you said this last week, and I made a mental note to ask, you said you weren't, what was the word you used? Compatible sleepers?
No, we're not compatible sleepers at all.
What is that? I mean, I get what that means, but how, in what ways are you not compatible? Like, is he a cuddler and you're not, or is he a mover and you're like, I'm dead to the world, which I know is not true.
What it is, he makes a lot of noise. He snores. So first of all, I'm a very light sleeper. I have a hard time falling asleep. I have a hard time staying asleep. So any type of disruptions, whether that be light, sound, air, you know, state of mind, will wake me up. And then I can't get back to sleep because my mind will fixate on the disruption unless it's resolved. And Kyle is sort of like a snoozing mammoth with no regard for human life outside of himself. Like, he just falls asleep. He'll snore. He'll wheeze. He'll, like, stretch his arm out and touch me, which is a no-no. So, yeah. And he can sleep through anything. Like, literally, he can sleep through anything. And I cannot. So we are absolutely the worst pairing. And I often make him leave the room.
Aw, I feel bad for Kyle.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Because he'll like go. We have a second bedroom. So he'll come and sleep in another bed. Or we have a couch. He loves sleeping on a couch. I'm not just saying that. And again, he can sleep blissfully anywhere. I feel nothing. I feel no amount of like guilt or remorse for kicking him out of my bedroom because it is so hard for me to sleep.
Oh my God. When Caroline and I first started dating, she gets like restless legs, and it's not like super bad, but there have been a couple nights where they were worse than other nights. And I don't know what, it was before we moved in together. And so she had a really bad night, and I didn't really notice her get up, or maybe I didn't, just didn't like, just thought she was going to the bathroom and that she would be back. And she didn't come back. And I got up and she was sleeping on the couch. And I was like, and then of course my emotional, you know, response is triggered because I'm like, you abandoned me.
You abandoned me.
You went to go sleep on the couch so that you could sleep and abandoned me in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, anytime I
That's why wake I feel up, for Kyle, because I'm like, oh, he's being ostracized. But you're like, no.
No, I'm being – honestly, it is so painful for me to sit there and like – because it truly causes like a major anxiety response in me to hear him like repetitively snore or make sound. It's almost like it becomes like an obsessive thought of like, I can't sleep. He's not letting me sleep. And honestly, like sometimes he'll like leave the room. I'll fall asleep first and he'll leave the room because he's just truly not done like scrolling through TikTok on his phone. So he'll just fall asleep somewhere else. And I'll sleep a full night without being woken up, wake up as though there's like little birds that are going to come, you know, and make my bed. I'm just like, oh my gosh, how did I sleep so well? I look over like, and he's not there. Like the difference of how well I sleep with him versus without him is vast. So I love him so much. I always want him there when I'm falling asleep. Mm-hmm. But once I'm gone, if he's gone, that's good with me.
I'm so cuddly. I'm like, come over here. And then she's like, over here. Okay, I have to roll this way now. My hip hurts. And I'm like, okay, but I'm just going to like lay on top of you then.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all that to say is if I sound different, it's because I did have a good night's sleep. Kyle only woke me up like 3 times last night. But again, at one point I did think he was gone because the bed is so big.
That's amazing.
So I'm a different person. You could say I'm a king.
I mean, your voice is light and bright.
Kingly. Light and bright. I sound well rested.
Stuart, you sound well rested.
And as a king, I'm feeling like I'm going to exert some taxes in the form of stamps.
Oh, my God.
How is that for
transition?
A
transition? That was amazing.
How is that for a segue? It's like I've done this before.
That it's was like a transition of a person who has had a full night fucking sleep.
Full night fucking sleep. I couldn't do that with sort of like 4 hours of sleep, which is sometimes what I get when I sleep with my absolute loving fiance. Who I do love very much.
Ah, aw.
But yes, today we are going to talk about the Stamp Act, which Arden and I both thought we already had done a whole episode about.
Turns out, no.
Turns out we haven't. We've just danced around the subject, which is great. So, yeah, today is all things Stamp Act.
Yeah,
Stamp Act. I'm very excited.
Very excited.
Before we jump in to this illustrious little act, do you want to talk about today's sources?
Sure. Today's sources are Colonial Williamsburg.
Oh, my God.
I can't even. Oh, my God. I cannot even.
I want to become the mayor of Colonial Williamsburg.
Oh, honey, I think you absolutely could and should. It's time. I absolutely
have to. If things with Kyle really go south, you can find me at Colonial Williamsburg.
That's where she'll be. That's where I'll be. The historian of the Department of State.
Ooh, yum.
Mm-hmm. And our beloved, our dear true, the one we would get a king-size bed for, history.com.
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 History.com. Well, well, well. I'm excited.
Yes.
I'm excited. I definitely learned about this in school. Mm-hmm. This is one of those, what was it? The Stamp Act, the Tea Act.
Tea Act. The Sugar Act?
The Sugar Act. Yeah. The trifecta. The Holy Trinity. Don't mess with our stamps. Don't mess with our tea. And don't you mess with our sugar.
I mean, they basically messed with everything that brought anybody joy in the colonies.
Right.
That's what they did. Aside from alcohol and tobacco, which I guess sugar goes, I think you used sugar to make alcohol. So like, but they, anything joy related, the British were like, you're going to give us some monies for it.
Mm-hmm. Bold move, British. Bold move.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's jump on in, shall we? So we're going to start off with talking about simply what was the Stamp Act. So here we absolutely go. The Stamp Act of 1765 was the first internal tax levied directly on American colonists by the British Parliament. So they hit them with the stamps first.
Yeah. Give me your paper good monies.
Mm. The act, which imposed a tax on all paper documents in the colonies, came at a time when the British Empire was deep in debt from the Seven Years' War and looking to its North American colonies as a revenue source. So you mean to tell me that we're mm-hmm. having to pay for your Seven Years' War?
Yes.
Over my dead petticoat body.
Yes. Also known as the French Indian War.
Also known as French Indian War, Seven Years' War.
Mm-hmm.
Arguing that only their representative assemblies could tax them, the colonists insisted that the act was unconstitutional, and they resorted to mob violence to intimidate stamp collectors into resigning.
They were like, if we kill the person taking the money, then they can't get our money.
I'll kill you! Come near my stamps and I'll kill you! That's so funny.
Yeah.
Parliament passed the Stamp Act on March 27th, 1765, and repealed it in 1766, but issued a declaratory act at the same time to reaffirm its authority to pass any colonial legislation it saw fit. So they're basically like, okay, you won this battle, but we're gonna win the war.
Correct. They were like, okay, calm down. We'll take away the Stamp Act, but we reserve the right to make your lives a living hell.
Right.
Whenever we see fit.
Whenever we see fit. The issues of taxation and representation raised by the Stamp Act strained relations with the colonies to the point that 10 years later, the colonists rose in armed rebellion against the British, known as the Revolutionary War. Don't come for our paper. Because you have to, I mean, this is all they have. All you do, everything you do in 1765 surrounds paper. This is a big, bold revenue stream for the British.
Yeah.
To take paper products and tax them.
Right. Because it was even like parchment. Playing parchment, playing cards,
yeah.
documents.
Ooh.
Like anything. Anything made of papier. So let's talk about the passing of the Stamp Act.
Let's.
So the American Revolutionary War was precipitated, like we talked about at the top, in part by a series of laws passed between 1763 and 1775 that regulated trade and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
This legislation caused tensions between colonists and imperial officials, who made it clear that the British Parliament would not address American complaints that the new laws were onerous. They're like, we don't hear you.
La, la, we don't la, hear la, you. La. You are British subjects.
You are British subjects. We don't
and
have
we
to
don't have to listen to you because we're British Parliament.
Mm-hmm. Britain's unwillingness to respond to American demands for change allowed colonists to argue that they were part of an increasingly corrupt autocratic empire in which their traditional liberties were being threatened. This position eventually served as the basis for the colonial Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting mad.
They're getting mad and they're about to write on trigger warning parchment.
Parchment.
That you can't tax.
No. During this time, one of the first acts passed was the Stamp Act. On March 22nd, 1765, Parliament passed the Stamp Act that was to come into effect the following November. This act would be a tax on paper products like playing cards. Taxing the fun.
Taxing the fun.
Taxing the fun. Like literally taxing one of the only fun. Funds. Yes.
Like that's just, I mean, come on. Taxing like, what the are they, fun.
What do they have to the do? Letters. Like go out in the field and then play cards. That's literally all they have and they're taxing yeah. the fun.
You can either write a letter or play cards.
Yeah.
Those are the two activities you can do with your spare time. Or read a book, which is made with, you guessed it, paper.
Paper. God. All those? All three of those? Paper.
Paper.
Virginians were outraged because Parliament was continuing to attempt to legislate a tax without consulting them. They were used to taxing themselves through their own local representatives in Williamsburg's House of Burgesses, not by a parliament reaching into their pockets from across the ocean.
Yeah, they're like, hello. What is the purpose? What is the purpose of this whole governing body we've created over here with right. your approval?
Right.
If you're just going to come in and be like, oh, yeah, yeah. We're going to do something here.
It's taxes. Stand we're aside. Doing taxes now. Taxes.
Just everybody. Collect the taxes. Just collect because the taxes. I said so. That's why.
Uh-huh.
That's why.
Because the governing body that they had was collecting taxes, and then the governing body issuing this new tax, they weren't a part of. I get it. I am on the side. Shockingly of the colonists.
Shocking.
Shocking. The tax set a precedent in a legal system driven by precedents, and while it might seem to be a small tax for the gentry, for the less wealthy, it is a burden that would have a significant effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have the money. They're like, we can barely afford the parchment.
Every shilling counts.
Right.
And if we're having to pay more to get frickin' paper... or a deck of cards, like what? For the British who live across the sea,
right?
Nah. That's not benefiting us in any way, shape, or form. That's not money that's going back into our infrastructure.
No,
our roads.
No, mm-mm. Our education system.
It's going to the 7 Years' War bank account. No, thank Please. You.
No,
mm-mm.
Because they like took over all of these You know, like they expanded their empire, which is basically now what they have to pay for because they have these extra territories. Yeah. So it's going not even to pay for like stuff in England. It's going to pay for the lands they've now conquered.
The lands, the what's it called? Oh, what the Commonwealth.
Yes. In each of the 13 colonies, the same measures were happening. The tax was scheduled to come into effect, but there were few who would collect it. United in their protests, colonists from Boston, Massachusetts to Savannah, Georgia, bullied their respective stamp collectors into not commencing their duties.
Hell yeah.
Hell.
You suck.
You suck.
You suck, John. Hey, go don't away, talk to John. Me like that, John. Okay, John. Well, don't go in to collect money. You know that this is wrong. You know that this is wrong, John. And you're ugly. How about that?
And you're ugly.
You know that mob mentality.
Oh yeah, they're like, this is wrong, and also you just suck as a human and you're dumb looking. Only in Georgia was the stamp collector able to distribute the stamped papers, but he was forced to flee shortly afterwards.
Fry, Fry, you've got to get out of here. They're going to come get me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be the snitch who collects the stamp money.
No. He's like, here's the paper that says you need to pay me money. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't hurt me.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right, John. I'm on to your scheme.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about why the colonists opposed the Stamp Act. Obviously, there's some obvious reasons, and then there's more nuanced reasons, if you can believe it. So, coming in the midst of economic hardship in the colonies, the Stamp Act aroused vehement resistance. Although most colonists continued to accept Parliament's authority to regulate their trade, they insisted that only their representative assemblies could levy direct internal taxes such as the one imposed by the Stamp Act. They rejected the British government's argument that all British subjects enjoyed virtual representation in Parliament, even if they could not vote for members of Parliament. So they're making the very obvious argument of, like, people who we didn't vote for, who we can't even vote for,
right,
are making these decisions. Therefore, they don't represent us because we do not have somebody that we can put in there to represent us.
Exactly.
The colonists also took exception with the provision denying offenders trials by jury. A vocal minority hinted at dark designs behind the Stamp Act. So It is a 1-2 punch. Not mm-hmm. only do we have no taxation without representation, but we don't have a fair trial by our peers to determine guilt or innocence.
No, it's wrong. It's wrong, I tell you.
These radical voices warned that the tax was part of a gradual plot to deprive the colonists of their freedoms and to enslave them beneath a tyrannical regime. I mean, I get it.
Kind of sounds like.
It's not crazy to think this. You know, I don't think that they're being what's it called? Paranoid.
No.
Playing off traditional fears of peacetime armies, they wondered aloud why Parliament saw fit to garrison troops in North America only after the threat from the French had been removed. These concerns provided an ideological bias that intensified colonial resistance. So we're starting to have this conspiracy theory that the British are sort of fattening the colonists up for, like, slaughter, that being...
Right.
Where they just don't have rights and they just work and there's no representation and it's everybody's worst fear. So they have that swirling around. And then on top of that, the British are moving troops into the United States or into North America after the war is already over that they were fighting. So there's no reason for troops to be here.
No. In fact,
this amount of troops.
No, they should be gone. So
something's up.
Something's up and the colonists know it.
Yeah. They're like, we're not dumb. We can see this with our eyes. You're moving mm-hmm. pieces into place. You are preparing something.
Yep.
Interesting.
So 2 months after the act was passed in Parliament, Patrick Henry from Virginia presented his provocative views on the Stamp Act at a meeting of Virginia's House of Burgesses in Williamsburg, Virginia.
I love that he had provocative views on the Stamp Act. It's okay.
And I love that he like just gets to say them. Like there wasn't a place in any of the stuff that I read that was like Patrick Henry was, you know, a well-respected orator and aristocrat who led valiantly in the war of... No, I think he was just like a dude.
He was just a guy with feelings.
He was just a dude with feelings. With
time to write his thoughts down.
Oh my God. He was like, hear me. I'm pissed. Yo,
listen to me right now.
Uh-huh.
This I'm Stamp pissed. Act is a bunch of bullshit.
Bunch of malarkey.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Henry argued that colonists hold the same rights as people of Great Britain, especially the right to only be taxed by their own local representatives. When shocked representatives suggested some of his ideas amounted to treason, he uttered words that became history, shouting, quote, if this be treason, make the most of it.
Make the most of it. If this be treason, let's make a meal out of it, honey.
YOLO!
Ride or die, babe. You're not taking my money for my stamps.
No.
Sorry. YOLO.
Mm-hmm.
Make the most of it.
Yep. These Stamp Act resolves were presented to the House of Burgesses for approval. They were sent to England, along with other grievances of the Burgesses, for the British government to see and consider a repeal. Henry presented in total 7 resolutions, laying out his opposition to the tax. 4 of them were accepted. Although they were not written for public consumption, selections of Henry's fiery rhetoric began to be published widely in newspapers throughout the colonies. Ooh. So it got leaked. It's being spread and people are getting angry.
Headline, this is bullshit.
Make the most of your treasonous time.
If this be treason. I say if this be treason, you say make the most of it. If this be treason, make the most of it. If this be treason,
make the most of it.
Exactly. Hell yeah. Go off, Patrick Henry.
Uh-huh. Patrick Henry's words were joined by propaganda satire, slogans, and songs. The tax with obscure legislative roots became a major barrier to good relations between Britain and its colonies in North America.
I love the idea of there being a song.
Yep. Where's the song? I want the song.
We're not gonna take it. Mm-hmm. No! We're not gonna take it. We're not gonna take it anymore. Wow.
Continuing on, newspapers throughout the colonies reprinted the resolutions, spreading their radical message to the broad audience. The resolutions provided the tenor for the proclamations of the Stamp Act Congress, an extra-legal convention composed of delegates from 9 colonies that met in October of 1765. We're so freaking organized. Anytime we want to get stuff done, they're like, you know what? First of all, we're going to have a convention, but there's going to be delegates. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, we're going to have some shit written down on parchment that's going to change the game.
They had a process. They had an Excel sheets process that, like, you took them off. Delegates, check. Convention check. Called, check. Check. Parchment, check. Quills, check. Check.
This Benjamin isn't our Franklin, first rodeo. Check. The Stamp Act Congress wrote petitions to the king affirming both their loyalty and the conviction that only the colonial assemblies had the constitutional authority to tax the colonists. So very smart. They're like, look. We are loyal to you, obviously. That's not what this is about. We're just saying, love you. First of all, I love you.
Yeah.
But you have to understand where I'm coming from. Like, we have this thing in place, and you're ignoring it. Mm-hmm. You know, this relationship only works if we both respect each other, and I don't feel like you're respecting us right now.
No, it is a bit like you and Kyle and your sleeping arrangements. Love you. Exactly right. Cannot sleep next to you.
Cannot do it.
We need a solution. Love you.
Love you. Can't and I, deal. I, of course, am King George III here in this situation.
Of course. Like,
Kyle is the American colonist. Obviously.
It wouldn't go any other way.
While the Congress and the colonial assemblies passed resolutions and issued petitions against the Stamp Act, the colonists took matters into their own hands. So we have, like, the hoity-toity, our boys in wigs, assembling, being delegates. And then there's sort of the boots on the ground who are like, you can go delegate and have your conventions, but we've got some other things that we're going to try. The most famous popular resistance took place in Boston, where opponents of the Stamp Act, calling themselves the Sons of Liberty, our boys, enlisted the rabble of Boston in opposition to the new law. So they're like going around Sam Adams being like, bring out anybody who has like a piece of shit brother, have them call me because we're going to make some trouble. you want to send a message? Go to Boston and get Boston. Go to Boston.
Oh, God. Yeah.
The mob paraded through the streets with an effigy of Andrew Oliver, Boston stamp distributor, which they hanged from the Liberty Tree and beheaded before ransacking Oliver's home. Oliver agreed to resign his commission as stamp distributor.
I would too. I would be like, with you.
There's just no job that's worth it. You know, you've got a mob of Bostonians taking your statue around the city, hanging it, and then beheading it. Like, is it a stone statue? How do you behead this thing?
I thought it was like maybe some pillows, some hay. You know what I mean? It's soft. Yeah.
Regardless, if I'm Andrew Oliver, I'm like, you know what? My passion is not in the stamp business. It's not in the tax collecting business. This isn't worth it.
No.
This isn't worth it to me.
No. Love you.
This is a good thought, Andrew. This is a good thought.
Yes.
Similar events transpired in other colonial towns as crowds mobbed the stamp distributors and threatened their physical well-being and their property. Look, I am never about threatening people's lives. I don't think it's working. But I can see why they chose this route in 1765.
Sure. Sure.
If in 1765, so ask for a single pence, I'll kill you.
I'll kill you.
I'll kill you.
Uh-huh. And not just this pillow version of you. I will literally kill you.
Yeah. The actual flesh and bone you.
Yep.
By the beginning of 1766, most of the stamp distributors had resigned their commissions, many of them under duress.
Yes.
Mobs in seaport towns turned away ships carrying the stamp papers from England without allowing them to discharge their cargo. This ship ain't docking here.
No. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Back where you came from, buddy.
I love it. I feel bad for those ship captains who like made the long trek and then they're like, fuck, please just, I need to get off this boat. Please just, can we just, I need time away from the boat.
This has to be so common though. Like I feel as though, and I'm making up this statistic, which Great. Is that it has to be that 40% of ships actually delivered their cargo in the 18th century. For one reason or whether it's the weather, they lose pirates. It, there's pirates, there's, I'm just, if you're a ship captain, you have to know that there is a 60% chance that we're not getting from point A to point B.
That's
we're not
true.
Successfully doing this thing.
No.
And I love that. I love that. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here is what the colonists said to those ships.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Determined colonial resistance made it impossible for the British government to bring the Stamp Act into effect. So, in 1766, as we said at the top, Parliament repealed it,
mm-hmm.
placating but also still plotting. This wasn't the end for Parliament. It was just the beginning. God.
Oh my God, that's awesome. I want like Hugh Grant to narrate that season finale.
Oh.
So, what is the legacy of the Stamp Act?
Mm.
The end of the Stamp Act did not end Parliament's conviction that it had the authority to impose taxes on the colonists. The British government coupled the repeal of the Stamp Act with the Declaratory Act, as Lizzie said, a reaffirmation of its power to pass any laws over the colonists that it saw fit. However, the colonists held firm to their view that Parliament could not tax them.
We're at a stalemate.
Sounds like we have a problem.
We are at a stalemate.
Stalemate.
You cannot tax us. We've Mm-mm. built this whole thing. We have the tax system in place. Mm-hmm. We can't have two taxings.
No. Illegitimate taxings.
Mm.
The issues raised by the Stamp Act festered for 10 years before giving rise to the Revolutionary War and... grandly and ultimately American independence.
You know what's interesting about this is in my head, it's like the Stamp Act, the Townshend Act, that's what it's called, the Townshend Act.
Yes, Townshend Act.
The third act.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they were literally like 3 months apart. It was one and then two and then three and then we declare mm-hmm. war. Like it feels like it all happens within a calendar year. What I find so interesting about learning about the Stamp Act now as an adult is having to wrap my head around that there was a 10-year break between mm-hmm. the Stamp Act and the actual Revolutionary War. Because yeah. it feels in my head that in 1775... we have these acts coming out of the woodwork.
Uh-huh.
But this is actually tensions boiling over for a literal decade.
Yep.
A decade.
Yep.
So we're not petty. This festered for a long time.
We thought about it.
We thought Absolutely. About this. We thought mm-hmm. about this breakup.
We and gave we decided... the king a chance to redeem himself. And mm-hmm. he did not take it.
He we're like, look, you are our king. That's not what we're arguing.
No. We just don't want you to tax
us. You are not our parliament.
Us.
Parliament.
No. We have
we are not in there.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, the Stamp Act.
Yeah.
Wow. Look, what can I say? One thing led to another, and I'm glad. So that concludes our episode of the Stamp Act. And as always, if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. As always, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.